This year marks the 30th anniversary of WACO, the shorthand for the fiery, deadly standoff between federal agents and members of the religious cult, the Branch Davidians, led by David Koresh. They were holed up in a compound on Mount Carmel outside Waco, Texas. On February 28, 1993, agents from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the ATF, propelled by reporting in a local paper about sexual abuse, bigamy, and weapons in the compound, raided it. Branch Davidians shot back. Four agents were killed, as were six Branch Davidians. Hundreds of federal agents, now also from the FBI, then began a 51-day siege that ended when FBI tanks rammed the compound, tear gas was sprayed, an inferno started. 76 people died, including more than 20 children, most fathered by Koresh. It all unspooled on television, inspired one young man, Timothy McVeigh, who'd become the Oklahoma City bomber, another, Alex Jones, who built his empire on conspiracy theories about Waco, and also inspired modern-day militias behind the January 6th insurrection. Phew. Author Kevin Cook's deep dive into Waco and what followed is called Waco Rising. He joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's good to be with you.
Boy, there is so much here. You dive deep. You talk about David Koresh's early life, born Vernon Howell, dropped out of high school, kind of a misfit, found religion, made his way to the compound of the Branch Davidians, who are a splinter group of Seventh-day Adventists. We see Koresh took on others who wanted to lead it in, you know, gun battles. But just what was it about Koresh that made people want to follow him, because he did win the leadership of this group?
David Koresh is often described as charismatic, a cult leader. Cult is a word that I don't use, partly because it means so many different things to different people. The thing about Koresh was not really charisma. It was that he was able to make the Bible, the often confusing, often conflicting stories of the Bible, compelling, to have great meaning to his followers. His followers were sincerely religious. I happen to believe that David Koresh was a monster. What he did, I think, was to make his followers feel that they had a great role to play in the coming apocalypse. They focused on the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation. They focused on the violence that was coming and believed that they had a final battle to fight against the government. And they used a biblical term to describe the ATF and FBI and other law enforcement forces encircling them. They called it Babylon.
Right.
And they believed that what happened when the government forces struck proved that David Koresh was right all along and that the end of the world was happening before their eyes.
Well, and this is the major criticism of the ATF, first and foremost, but then the FBI that followed, that the government agencies didn't understand who they were dealing with, didn't understand that in the aggressiveness, all the tanks that rolled in, they were actually part of his self-fulfilling prophecy.
I think that's exactly right. The FBI initially considered it what they call a hostage barricade situation. That is, in some sense, like what we all picture Dog Day Afternoon, that this is an instance in which the evil perpetrator has taken hostages. But the Branch Davidians were not hostages. They wanted only to be left alone. So the idea that was pushed on the new attorney general, Janet Reno, Bill Clinton's new attorney general, who had made her name fighting child abuse cases, the FBI, I believe, misled her intentionally by telling her that David Koresh and the other Branch Davidians were beating babies. Mm-hmm. Koresh was a monstrous figure. He took, quote-unquote, wives as young as 12 years old. There was definitely sexual abuse going on. But the children that came out of that compound showed no signs of physical abuse.
Although he was, as you said, monstrous, separating the men from the women. These were married couples, bedding the women to father children. He had over a dozen of his own there. He sent other children out as he did his negotiations. And two members who didn't want to be separated, didn't buy into this, left. They were the ones who were calling into the newspapers and saying, this is what's going on. The newspapers wrote about possible child abuse. And it all just, you can see how it just builds and builds and builds to there seemed to be a point of no return.
I think that's true. The initial FBI negotiator, Gary Nesner, got a lot of the children out by negotiating with David Koresh, by being patient. After Nesner was relieved, nobody came out. The decisions were horrendous. I believe that what happened at Waco really boiled down to an unhinged leader named Koresh colliding with a government that made a series of deadly mistakes.
With an unmoving government that didn't understand the religion and what he was preaching and how they were playing into it. Look, I mean, it's astonishing, and we recommend the book for all these details about what was going on. Crowds gathering, vendors arriving, and you detail how among the crowds was a 24-year-old Timothy McVeigh who sold bumper stickers. Alex Jones was a teenager who was working at a radio station. He started programming just about the conspiracy theories around Waco. He was fired by the radio station, began his own empire, as we know, rebuilt a chapel on the grounds of the conflagration, which is still a tourist attraction. Talk more about, you know, what came out of Waco.
I think it is important to mention that Timothy McVeigh was there, that he was one of millions of Americans who believed that the government is out to take your guns. And if you will not surrender your guns, the government will kill you if necessary. And what happened in Waco led fuel to that belief. Timothy McVeigh, a decorated Gulf War veteran and a Koresh supporter, was down there, as you say, selling bumper stickers. He chose the second anniversary of the fire at Waco to bomb the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City in 1995. He hoped to incite a civil war against the government. These things still echo, of course, today. It was 1999 when the shooters at Columbine High School chose that same anniversary. They didn't have enough ammunition that day. They waited one more day. But that, again, was meant to echo what happened at Waco and then the shared anniversary with Oklahoma City. Alex Jones, yes, he did hatch his first conspiracy theory at Waco, calling it a murderous government killing. And we hear further echoes all the way up through January 6th. And I fear beyond January 6th, because there are still very many people who believe that what happened at Waco, they call it their awakening, and talk about Waco 2.0, talk about remembering Waco as the example of a murderous government rolling tanks toward Americans. I think that it gains more meaning as every day passes.
Well, in 2009, we remember that report that came out of the Department of Homeland Security, Darrell Johnson, writing about how domestic terrorism was the biggest threat to America. He was excoriated by Republicans, and Democrats backed away from it because it seemed to offend returning veterans, because it pointed to the number of veterans who were signing up on these militias. This Darrell Johnson said, the modern-day militia movement owes its existence to Waco. That's in 2009. Kevin Cook, tell us more how the word Waco is used.
The site at Waco has become a pilgrimage. It's really a hub of the modern militia movement. By no means are all the visitors there militia members, but the current pastor did tell me that the Proud Boys were here not long ago. He told them that if David Koresh were alive today, he would be one of them. Mm. Waco, the word, has become what one FBI agent described to me as the word that many militia members call their awakening. Remember Waco is one of the terms that one hears.
Well, Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys now on trial, also has spoken of Waco.
Stuart Rhodes was another. To people like Tarrio, people like Stuart Rhodes, the deep state was revealed at Waco. The idea that government is out to take Americans' guns and will kill them if they resist. There were successful interventions later when the bloodshed was avoided through the lessons of Waco. Bill Clinton called this a mistake, and he said, it's my responsibility. Janet Reno said, had she known at the time what she learned later, she would not have given the okay for that tear gas attack.
So you draw the line to January 6th. Meantime, you also remind us that some of these Davidians still live in Waco, still go to that church. Some just say, look, we were just religious people. I don't understand how suddenly Donald Trump is involved with us, and he's referring to January 6th. Then there's Heather Jones, who was the last child to be released from the compound before it burned down and all the other children were killed. She still lives in that area. She's a mom. What does she tell you?
She told me that she still has dreams about David Koresh driving up, and I mean, this is a young woman who, from the age of 8, was groomed to become one of his wives when the time came, who was told not to love her parents because David Koresh was the only leader, the only person that the children in that compound were to follow. She has rejected religion because of the terrible experiences of her youth. She's one of the survivors that I came to like, spend time with, and like very much. There are others who have not rejected Koresh, even 30 years later, who believe that he will come back from the dead and lead them. I believe that his followers were very sincerely religious and were misguided in a deadly way, in a way that affected all of America, not only them.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much. Terrific book. It's called Waco Rising, David Koresh, the FBI and the Birth of America's Modern Militias. Kevin Cook, thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you, Robin. It was good to be with you.